Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Gibson. I'm happy to be here today in this beautiful place to talk to you about a three-year project that we've had where we've investigated the use of biochar on Indiana vegetable farms. So today I'm going to talk about, provide a little background on the promise of biochar, talk about the research method that we use, a participatory research approach, and then talk about what we found from the project, which is nearly completed. So biochar is a carbon-rich product. I said similar to charcoal, but it is essentially charcoal, but it's produced specifically to be incorporated in the soil. And the way that biochar is produced is that biomass of some sort is heated at temperatures from 300 to 900 degrees Celsius under low oxygen conditions. The product that comes out from that pyrolysis, there's two products. One is biofuels, and about half of the product comes out as biofuels. Biofuel can be used then for things like transportation, energy, oil, cosmetics. There's a number of products you can use from that. The other product that comes out of it, the solid product, the one that we're interested in today, is biochar itself. So as you can see from the tree, biochar has a number of potential benefits for the soil, for atmosphere, for carbon sequestration. There are really four main potential benefits for biochar. One is waste reduction. The second is the energy production. The third is soil fertilization or soil improvement. And then the final, which I think is particularly timely, is the sequestration of carbon. So there's been a little over a decade's worth of research on biochar, reaching now I think a couple hundred papers. So a substantial amount of research has been conducted. Several meta-analyses. The meta-analyses that have been conducted agree that biochar can increase soil fertility, improve crop yields, with some caveats. And the caveats are that the feedstock, and that's the biomass that goes into the pyrolysis, that feedstock is really important. And then also the pyrolysis technique is really important. And the key part of the pyrolysis that's important is the temperature. And so you can get different results depending on the feedstock and depending on the temperature. The biggest effects have been seen on acidic low fertility soils. Most of the research on biochar has been conducted in the tropics. We were really interested in testing it on temperate soils, higher fertility soils with better pH. And biochar can have both direct and indirect effects. The direct effects really come as a fertilization effect, which is that some phosphorus and potassium, some other things can come off of the biochar, help with plant growth. And then there are indirect effects, which can change soil structure, water retention, things like that. The other thing that biochar does, in which there's pretty good evidence for this in the literature, and a reason why some of the farmers in Indiana were excited about being on this project, is that there's several studies that suggest that biochar can reduce disease in vegetables. There's some evidence that it may directly affect pathogens, and there's some evidence that the biochar may change the soil microbial community in ways that favor beneficial microbes. So that's a little bit of a really quick intro to biochar. The next thing I want to talk about was how we organized this research. And when we got this grant, we got a grant from North Central Region SARE. We knew that we wanted to have a heavily farmer-influenced, farmer-driven research project. And participatory research can really range from situations where you may just have a contractual research where you basically pay a farmer for land or services, but it's not really a collegial, reciprocal relationship. You pay a farmer to participate in the project. We were really more interested in driving the research toward a collaborative or even collegial research project where scientists and farmers work as partners, we exchange ideas, and the farmers play an active role in designing and implementing the research. So as part of this project, in the first year, we had workshops in which we brought the farmers into Purdue and we talked about experimental design. And then we had subsequent meetings where we worked with the farmers to discuss and agree on which crop and varieties would be planted, how soil and pests would be managed, how we would plant the different crops, and how they would be harvested. And each year annually, we would get back together, we would review the previous season's results, we would talk about the internships, I'll tell you a bit more about that in a second, and we would look for ways to improve or modify our plan for the next year. So our experimental design, we had 6 Indiana farms, and we had 2 farms in the north. I know this isn't going to be picked up on the video, but we had 2 farms on the north, 2 farms in the south, and 2 farms in the center. And we apply biochar at 3 rates, 0, 10, 20 tons. The 20 ton is a common rate used in biochar research. And we conducted this over 3 years, and the crops that we planted, which were picked out by the farmers, were potatoes, kale, and tomatoes. The other kind of unique part of this research is that we had an internship program, so each farm in each year had an undergraduate intern who worked on the farm. And they were paid to be there for 12 weeks. They worked 20 hours per week. They managed the biochar experiment, which means they did things like take care of the weeds, check the plots, look for insect and pest damage, that sort of thing. And then in the time after they finished their work with the biochar project, they were able to go out and really kind of track or shadow the farmer and learn about the management of small farms. And then we met with them on online meetings every 2 weeks to discuss what they were doing on the farm and to cover specific topics about agriculture. So our farmers, we wanted a variety within the farmers. These are all small acreage farms. They range from a half acre to 10 acres. The farmers who participated ranged in experience from 5 to 28 years. So we had what would classify as beginning farmers all the way to very experienced farmers. They grew a number of crops. The smallest number was 8 crops, and the highest number was 80. And that was, we had one of the farms that participated was a flower farm, and she had an enormous number of flowers and varieties. All of these farms sold primarily directly to the public. So they sold to farmers markets, to CSAs, to restaurants. One farm had an on-farm stand, and we did have one farmer who sold wholesale. But primarily these were direct sale farms. We were really curious because we had this internship program as to whether the farmers themselves might have experience working as interns or apprenticeships, because we thought that might influence how they interacted with the interns in this program. And 2 of the farmers had that sort of experience before we started. So our interns, we drew from the state of Indiana. We sent out announcements to universities, and we advertised through Purdue Extension. We took undergraduate students. And 67% of them had worked on a farm. Only one of them had worked as a farm intern. Half had some form of research experience, typically as part of their undergraduate career. Only a quarter of them grew up on a farm, but most of them had friends or family that farmed. Indiana is a rural state, lots of agriculture, so this wasn't surprising. Most of them came from urban or suburban backgrounds. None of them had worked on a small farm, similar to the ones that were in our study. Half of them told us that when they graduated, they wanted to be able to farm in some fashion. And 42% came from disciplines outside of agriculture or natural resources. Okay, I'll jump into the data, and I'm just going to present the yield data, which I, as the title suggested, was a little disappointing. So these are the 6 farms. This is fresh weight, kilograms per plant for the first year. We had marketable potato weight. We did collect unmarketable data. We also collected and analyzed the number of potatoes and the number of tomatoes in the last year, and we saw no difference in potato weight among the treatments for any of the farms. I do want to point out, though, that there's variability in the potato yields, in the production among the farms. And for me, this was a really interesting finding because one of the things that I've taken from this study is that there's substantial variability among the farms and farming practices than we were likely to that could be addressed that might yield to greater benefits than trying to initiate a new product like biochar. In the second year, we grew kale, and in this year, we did see effects of biochar on 2 of the farms. The full hand farm, biochar actually increased kale yields. The highest biochar rate increased it compared to the control, but we saw an opposite pattern on Lane's End, which is that the biochar seemed to suppress kale yields. And in the third year, and this is really recent data because we just finished harvesting tomatoes about 2 weeks ago, we saw no effect. Again, similar to the potatoes. This too, though, I think highlights this difference in the yields that we saw on the different farms. And you can see the Perkins farm, for example, out-yielded the other farms by an order of magnitude. So we were really interested throughout the project in how farmers were perceiving the project and what they thought of biochar. And in each year, we started off the project, we did a pre-survey, and then we surveyed the farmers at the end of it each growing season. And we did that survey before we gave them the yield data. So we wanted to see what they thought of was happening with it. And it was interesting. We saw that they correctly, from our perspective, correctly assessed the potato and kale yields. So they got that right. But they thought that the biochar had increased tomato yields. I haven't shared the tomato yield data with them, but when we surveyed them, they thought that the biochar had increased tomato yields. Even though, from my perspective, this has been something of a disappointing outcome for biochar, the farmers didn't really see it that way. And half of them were more interested in biochar at the conclusion of the project than they were at the start. And the reason for this is that they identified, as good scientists do, reasons why we didn't see positive results. And one of the main things that they said is that we didn't inoculate the biochar. And so inoculation in this case means adding microbes to the biochar before you put it into the soil. There's not really evidence that that makes a difference in the literature, but there is anecdotal evidence from a number of people who work with biochar and who sell biochar. They also were concerned about the mesh size. So we bought this biochar from Colorado. It was beetle-killed pine, and it was an OMRI-certified biochar, so we were happy to get this since these are all organically managed farms. And they thought maybe if we'd used a different mesh size, we might have had a different result. And then the last thing that they identified was weather. And we did have significant weather events, particularly at the start of the project, that might have influenced it. So I said that we wanted to move them to a place where they were would be able to conduct their own experiments at the end. And we saw this is for 2015 and 2016, but we saw this is a Likert scale where 5 indicates strong agreement. And we saw that they agreed with statements that the project had increased their understanding of experimental design, increased their ability to design research. And I won't go into each of these, but very strong and positive responses to the internship program. And the internship program was something they very much wanted to continue. The interns, we wanted to see how that impacted them, particularly what they learned about the farms. And I put all the cohorts for this together, and we saw significant increases in knowledge and understanding, self-reported knowledge and understanding, across a wide range of variables, including farm budgets, pest management, soil fertility, etc. So, in summary, biochar didn't affect potato or tomato yields. It had mixed effect on kale. Despite these results, a majority of the farmers remained very interested in biochar. The yields varied tremendously among farms. From my perspective, that was actually a more interesting outcome than the biochar itself, and I think there are opportunities to work with these farmers to try to bring up their yields to a more standard. And then finally, farmers and interns were very positive about both the participatory learning component and the internships. I'll stop there and take questions. Sir. Yeah, so typically, a lot of the bioresearch, one of the things that you see is that it changes pH. And most of these farms had pretty good pH to start. So this was one of the things we were interested in. It's one thing to take it to kind of low-quality soils, and then you see an improvement. We were really interested in what would happen if you had it on better-quality soils. And we didn't see a change in pH. We saw some small changes in things like phosphorus and potassium, but really a weak signal for biochar in the soil. We sampled at the start of the experiment and then annually for it.